This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition, Batman Hush. In the dark, I'd like to read his mind. But I'm frightened of the things I might find. Oh, there must be something he's thinking of. iFanboy Special Edition Batman Hush. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with the Animation Brain Trust, Paul Montgomery. And Ryan Haupt.
Stole my joke, Paul. Don't appreciate that.
And we're introducing the newest co-host, the Gang of Men Outside Building Scaffolding, who you'll probably hear.
Oh, I thought you were going to make a joke that we were introducing a new co-host who was named Hush and just wouldn't say anything the whole show.
No. These are the 10 guys right outside my window who are literally building a scaffolding on top of the building across the street.
So I'm just imagining dozers from Fraggle Rock.
So you may hear them throughout the show. They may chime in. This is Batman Hush. Paul, what are the stats on this one?
35th overall, and then the 13th within this continuity, that within like the Jason O'Mara as Batman.
And that's enough.
Yeah.
We've had enough of this continuity. I mean, the comics have moved on for the most part.
That is the weird thing, is that the comics are no longer doing what the animated movies are doing. It makes the animated movies not feel, like, current or modern.
Yeah, and when Superman arrives in his old suit, you're just like, come on.
We've had two reboots since then.
It's not ending anytime soon. The next film we'll talk about at the end is also in the continuities. Here's our official word to Warner Brothers Animation. Enough.
Enough.
Enough. This is the adaptation of Batman Hush. This was the 12-issue story from Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee. Was it 15 years ago? 20 years ago?
It feels like it happened right when I was getting back into comics.
I have the 15th anniversary book here. I don't know when that came out. Maybe it was this year. Which was, you know, met with great fanfare.
It was peak Jeff Loeb. It was not peak Jim Lee.
Well, peak Jim Lee was in the 90s, it was like, with X-Men.
It was like Return. It's like Travolta in Pulp Fiction.
But it was peak Loeb. You had your Batman Hush. You had your Superman for All Seasons. You had the color, you know, Daredevil yellow, yeah. Spider-Man blue. It was an era of Loeb.
So the original storyline ran from December of 2002 through November of 2003.
So that's about 15, 16 years ago.
Sure.
Many people love that book. We often are asked about it to cover it in various ways in the iFanboy. And it's no one's real favorite here.
Nope.
I reread it actually this weekend.
You did?
Okay.
In anticipation of the film. I'm actually really glad I did because it brought up some interesting contrasts. I don't think I've read it since it originally came out. Because I didn't love it then, I don't really love it now, having reread it. Not to go into too deep about it, but I don't think Jim Lee's right for DC, which is ironic considering he is the face of DC. And as Tom King said in our TalkSplit interview with Josh Flanagan, Jim Lee is considered to be the house style for DC. To me, Hush is the first ushering in of an era of DC that I don't really love.
Yeah.
That's my personal take on it. It's not a bad story, I have to admit.
I would say it's a convoluted story.
It's super convoluted, but it's not bad. I just don't love it. And the thing that I did like about it was that it was a DC that no longer exists, so I really did enjoy spending 12 issues in that old DC universe.
I can see that. In anticipation of this, I read the Wikipedia article on this, which probably highlights that how convoluted it is, because it also goes on to talk about sort of the revisions that were made post this particular storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Like some retconning of Hush, and like Paul Dini did a lot of stuff with the Riddler situation coming out of this, and also Hush situation coming out of this to attempt to streamline it. It's also interesting that there's a sort of a long history of, like, about just as long as it's been since this storyline ran, a long history of trying to adapt this.
Oh, interesting.
For the screen. I found an interesting quote yesterday. Basically, Bruce Timm said, sure, it would be neat to adapt that, but you wouldn't want to do it as one movie. You'd want to do it as its own show, like its own series or miniseries or something.
Yeah.
And it works best as a comic book, not as a movie. But they also tried to do it like a couple times with not the original Batman animated series, but the Batman, younger Batman character.
Yeah.
So Alan Burnett and other people were trying to do that, and then they kind of...
It makes sense. It was hugely popular. And sure. So, I mean, if you're going to do that kind of thing, I'm a little surprised it took him this long. Although I think we're going to find out Bruce Timm's prediction was correct.
Yeah. I consider it the Ready Player One of Batman stories. It's like, scoop up. but I mean, there are people who like Ready Player One a lot. I, for one, don't like that story, and I think it's a problematic way of doing it. But it's like, let's scoop all of the Batman characters into one story and have everyone involved in some way. And
it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, I think the mystery didn't end up holding it together. Thing. If you're going to do a 12-issue, it's not prestige because it was within the book itself, but a 12-issue sort of prestige story that rocks Batman's world, air quotes, you might as well have as many of the characters involved as possible. And I know probably the excuse was to have Jim Lee draw as many of the characters as possible. Just to close the loop on the book before we get to the movie, it was just nice to be back in the world where Tim Drake was Robin. And I enjoyed reading it, even if I didn't love the story. I found things interesting about it, if I didn't love the story.
And that's just speaking directly to the book, not the movie, because that is different here.
I did not reread the book, but I know those where I thought I remembered the story well enough, and then in watching this movie, I kept having those moments of like, oh yeah, that did happen in that book. Weird. It was a lot of that.
So let's get to the film. This film was directed by Justin Copeland, written by Ernie Altbacker, and as we mentioned before, stars the actors who have been in the continuity stories, Jason O'Mara as Batman, Peyton List as Batgirl, Sean Maher as Nightwing, Jerry O'Connell as Superman, Rebecca Romijn as Lois Lane, and then people like Jennifer Morrison plays Catwoman. And,
I think there might be an error there. I think Peyton List is Ivy.
And Batgirl.
Is she both?
According to this.
I thought it was somebody. I think that might be attributed wrong online because I ran into that as well. You go ahead. I'm going to look that up.
It's your standard cast that's been through these before. And the movie's a mess.
Yeah.
The movie's a big mess.
I get nervous when I'm not enjoying one of these because I'm like, is this going to be one of those where I get told I'm just a big old dummy and I got it wrong? But I'm very relieved to hear you say that.
I would just say that the first half of the film, and this is an hour and 20 minutes, so we're knocking on the door of feature length with these films. The first half was really close to the book. It was until the part where Batman confronts Hush in that random hall of mirrors in the middle of the city. I had the book with me. And I was sort of following along just to see how it was going to differ. And it was really close. I mean, there were obviously changes they made and things that were compressed. But structurally wise, the first half was really close to the book. And I was actually enjoying it. And then in the middle, it veers wildly from the book. And I'm not saying this is the problem with the movie, but it veers wildly. And then it's like a butterfly effect of changes. So by the time you get to the end, it's unrecognizable. If I was a huge Hush fan, I'd be pissed. They radically changed the story. They radically changed the villain. I mean, the Riddler is still the ultimate villain, but there is no Hush. There is no Tommy Elliot. He does get killed in the middle. It's not a fake out. Tommy Elliot's not set up as the new villain in Batman's life. He is dead, and I was shocked. And considering there's so many huge fans of this story, I can't even imagine what they're thinking having watched this.
It's interesting because it's a twist designed for the people who know the story well.
Yeah.
But because it's only really a twist if you're going in expecting it to be
right.
Bruce's friend is actually Hush, the surgeon.
Right.
But also by doing that, you're ticking off the people who know the story so well. If they're the kind of person that really wants this, you know, you to follow the source material really well.
Right.
For me, it kind of worked a little bit. Like, at least I appreciated them trying to do something different because I knew I was familiar with the story, at least, if not the finer details. But I knew that I was like, oh, right, it's Bruce's friend, turns out to be Hush. And it ends up being like sort of like I've always thought of it as sort of like a lesser than Harvey Dent situation,
mm-hmm.
because you take when you do the Two-Face story right, which also involves Ivy. Now that I think about it, at least in the animated version, you've got Bruce's best friend turns out to be the bad guy, and it's not necessarily a twist or a surprise. But, anyways, I always thought that dynamic worked better than this guy who was just introduced in this storyline. And like, oh, well, that's going to be the bad guy. So there's this twist in there for people who have already read the book. But I think the people who would be the most adamant about this adaptation even happening are the ones who would probably want them to stick to that version of events. And so they come up with this, you know, the Riddler was a crucial part of it. And they did some retconning after the storyline, or else it's in the epilogue of the story. Is there Riddler's involvement?
Yeah, in the book, he's the ultimate master.
In the epilogue?
Yeah, he's the ultimate mastermind.
He is the mastermind, but he's not Hush.
No.
Right.
No, definitely not. So, I mean, when you look at an adaptation, you can look at it one of two ways. You can just want to see this thing you love in a new medium, or you can want to be surprised by it. I think most people who watch these want to see the stories they love in a new medium, see it come to life. And so, if you are a big fan, unlike the three of us, of Hush, and you saw this movie, I'd love to know what you think. You can tell us in the comments of the show if you were pissed or if you thought it was interesting or if you were happy to be surprised, because I was real shocked. And also, I got really less interested in it once it sort of started coming apart story-wise. Like, once the halfway part hit and the story went off in a wild new direction, I got much less interested in the story.
I had that same experience. I actually paused it and went and did something else for like a half hour and had to come back and kind of, you know, felt like taking my medicine to kind of finish it after that point.
Some of the things that are different beyond the actual story, the killer, the whole plot. So Bane replaces Killer Croc. Batgirl replaces Huntress.
Right.
Lex Luthor replaces Talia, although he's also in the comic, but as the president. And then a combination, well, it's really just Dick Grayson replaces Tim Drake in the story, even though he's also in the comic. He keeps his old scenes, plus he gets Tim's scenes from the book. Two-Face, other than a really brief flash, is not in the film at all. He's a big part of the story. Completely cut out the huge Jason Todd fake-out, which had happened in the comics before he returned. That was a huge part of the story.
That was my favorite part of the story from the comic.
Ra's al Ghul is not in it at all.
They mentioned the League of Assassins via Lady Shiva, right, who was in the comic.
Yeah, that was in the comic too, because whole thing is the Riddler had a brain tumor, which is in the movie, and he gets saved through the Lazarus pit. And so obviously Ra's is big, you know, it's his pit. And every time pit's used, it's destroyed, so he was pissed. And so they were heavily involved in the story too. And that, other than the very beginning when Lady Shiva shows up to say that the Lazarus pit's been used, they're not in the story at all. I would not expect this to be in the movie, but a major thing happened in this story where this was the death of Harold, Batman's longtime tinkerer. He was killed in the comic. He's not in the movie. I think that's all the missing characters, the major missing characters.
Do I remember this correctly? Was Harold sort of like one of the red herrings for who could be Hush? Or am I remembering
for like
that? For like a second.
Yeah. This movie also features the stupid thin Amanda Waller version.
It's a good character model. I mean, not for Amanda Waller, maybe, but someone else was like, yeah, it's a good character model.
It's great, but it's not her. She's also in the book. It features some dumb kryptonite brass knuckles that are not in the book. Superman's in it a lot less in the movie than he is in the book. I'm just looking through my notes here of things they changed.
The structure of this plot is so... It's going back to, you know, Bruce Timm saying, like, this does not make a movie. It's not a movie structure. It's just, it's all over the place. Like, they're going back and forth from Gotham to Metropolis, and then you're, and then it's got the, you know, the Catwoman.
In the book,
they
go to the Middle East to the Lazarus Pit too.
Like, yeah, and I was just like, what? Like, I mean, so they do attempt to streamline it. Like, ultimately, they're like, okay, well, you know, we'd be biting off a lot more than we can chew to do the Chase and Todd stuff. Although that seems like a very important aspect of the storyline in retrospect.
Yeah.
Even though it's like, I find it weird, like in retconny, why is, they're just doing it to mess with Bruce, right? Like that's
yeah, sort of the whole thing. There's a constant psychological torture happening through the use of Clayface. And when they didn't do the Jason Todd bit, you know,
there's like no,
there's no reason to use Clayface. And they use him one time in the movie pertaining to be Riddler, but it's a build in the comic.
It's like they're removing pieces of the puzzle in order to make the puzzle smaller and easier to manage within the scope of a feature. And again, they don't have a full feature length. It's getting there. But by doing that, you're removing important connections for the pieces that are left on the board. So like, why does this need to be here?
The biggest loss, I think, is Tommy Elliott himself, who now is a waste of time in the story.
Right.
When he gets killed, at this point, I didn't know they were changing the story. When he gets killed, I thought, well, they haven't done anything to make me care about Tommy Elliott, so I don't really care.
Well, they had to keep that image of the Joker, you know,
right,
posed over him with the gun with the bang flag.
Right, but one of the things that's missing is that since they're cutting all this stuff out, is they cut all the backstory, almost all the backstory out between him and Bruce,
yeah,
and
there's
the flashbacks. So he dies, like, you're just like, okay, the kind of obnoxious guy died. He wasn't really, I didn't really like him, and now he's not the villain, so I don't really care at all. I don't know why. I mean, cut him out of the story completely then.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was like, when are they going to do a flashback? Because we don't have any reason to care about this character other than, like, Bruce introduces him to us as he's introducing him to Selina. And it's like, otherwise, why is he there? Like,
Ryan, tell us what we're wrong here.
It's just a screw with.
I mean, you're not. They didn't. Yeah, I kept waiting for them to do something with him, and I also thought, I know we've had somewhat mixed feelings on Jason O'Mara's performance as Batman Bruce Wayne. I thought this was a movie where you really needed somebody to do a different voice for Bruce than they do for Batman, and yeah, there's basically no change between the two voices.
That made me laugh. Yeah, at the party, it's like, come on, dude. Yeah.
And like when he's trying to be emotional and sincere, it just came across as so flat. So even the moments where they tried to make you connect Bruce and Tommy together, you know, he's like, Tommy, I wish we could be better friends.
No, thanks. You're an emotional robot.
Oh, yeah.
So they had to do a lot of heavy lifting with just the eye holes in the cowl.
Yeah.
Like, this is the most emoting in one of these kinds of Batman movies. Like, outside of, like, I don't know, in a Hanna-Barbera Batman, maybe? Like, maybe he did some more of that. But, like, here, it's just, like, they had to really stretch it.
And they made such a strangely weird big deal about him changing into a very similar but slightly bluer costume.
That was the best moment of the movie, where he ditched the New 52 outfit to wear his classic Batman outfit. I mean, that was the classic Batsuit. With the big belt and the lighter blue, I mean, that was,
yeah,
that was, I was, that made me happy. He didn't have the chin strap. It was great.
There's more cushioning in the cowl, Alfred said.
There's a bit in the book about that, how he wears a suit with a more reinforced head because he fractured his skull when he fell.
Yeah, that's another thing. In the comic, he actually cracks his skull in that huge fall.
And that's why he did Tommy, Tommy puts a tracker in his skull, and that was a bit, like, there was a lot of stuff there. I feel like they wanted to change the story for whatever reason, and they didn't really follow through on all the things that needed to change. So there was, it's like partially in there, and then it's like, well, it just.
And also, weird. Did they ever even bring up that Tommy was also an orphan? Like, that was something he and Bruce bonded over? Because, nope. I mean, and then there's a reveal about that in maybe Hush, maybe one of the
later. He orchestrated that.
It wasn't Hush. He killed his
yeah.
But that's out the window when Tommy is no longer in the story after the 30-minute mark.
Well, they use his corpse to freak out Batman.
Right. But like,
which is just why.
I did enjoy that Tommy at that party just downed both those whiskeys when Bruce bailed on him.
That's what I do. I mean,
for me,
I've never liked the Hush character. I don't care about the Hush character.
It's a neat design.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just trying.
No, the Invisible Man design's cool. I mean, the suit underneath the trench coat's not cool, but the trench coat and gauze face is cool.
I don't mind the suit under the trench coat. I actually kind of dug it when it was the Jason Todd Clayface version. But in the comic, doesn't he only speak in quotes?
Oh, I don't know. I just know that for a couple years, like, Paul Dini really loved using him and other people. And I just got... I got so sick and tired of
it. It's just weird. Like, you know, Batman has the most storied and notorious rogues gallery in all of comics. And so it's weird that in the, you know, early 2000s, they introduced a new villain who was supposed to be at that caliber, and that comics like pushed it hard enough that he stuck with some group of the fan base, but definitely not me. I have like no, even though I enjoyed the comic, I think more than either of you did, like I never needed to see the Hush character ever again.
Right. And this feels like this keeps
coming back. And I don't know why.
It feels, well, I feel like this is it. You know, it's like the whole thing is the reveal of right. who he is. Like his whole thing is I'm Hush Hush. Like it's a secret.
Oh God, so that opening.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, that sucked, but like that's the mystery. And then like, once you get beyond that, there's not really anything else to explore with him. Like, his gimmick is that he used the other villains like chess pieces. And yeah. How, I mean, you could do that with the Mad Hatter.
His whole thing ultimately is that because he knows Bruce and Bruce's secret and Bruce's life, he can push Bruce's buttons in a way that the Mad Hatter or Riddler can't. That's the pitch, if you're pitching Hush, yeah. is that he is Bruce's childhood best friend who knows everything about him, so he's therefore Bruce's most deadly adversary. Fine. Whether or not they succeeded in doing that is up for debate, but that's the pitch on Hush. Why is he different than the other characters? So I don't necessarily mind the introduction of him.
Like, he's a one-off, and there's not really much reason to use him anywhere else, unless you're doing, like, Hush 2. Like, it just becomes its own thing. Like, he just doesn't work as a recurring villain.
I saw him. Let's shift gears a second and talk about, so Batman's the main character, but the second lead is Catwoman.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the book, this is basically the beginning of where we are now in the Batman comics with Catwoman as the fiance at one point.
Yeah.
This is the book where he reveals his identity to her, which was a little shocking.
In the comic.
Yeah. Well, he did it here too.
He does it, but I just mean the shocking part.
Yeah, they
the thing
did.
That was,
yeah.
The thing that was shocking for me was I forgot that was a reveal in the comic. And I assumed, because Jason O'Mara is acting, that she knew.
Right.
Like, just their interaction in that party scene in the beginning.
Right.
I thought, oh, that in this status quo, she knows who he is.
It's funny, because in the comic, there's a line about that from Nightwing where he says she probably knows anyway.
Right, like, how could she not, you know?
Anyway, so what did you guys think of them as a duo, their relationship? There's a lot more in here than in the book. The whole middle section where she's basically living in the manor and they go on adventures and they're fighting crime together was all not in the book, which felt weird because it felt like you guys are really focused on this Hush mystery. Now you're off fighting Two-Face and the Penguin, and maybe you should focus. What did you guys think of their duo in this movie?
I actually didn't mind it. I liked the little breakfast scene where, you know, Selina just keeps stealing his coffee and stealing his croissant while he's reading the paper. I thought that was actually cute and well done.
She steals stuff.
Yeah, I didn't even think of it that way, Paul, but that's totally correct. I think I actually liked how Dick Grayson and Alfred reacted to the new relationship more than anything Bruce did. I mean, Damon was terrible.
That was awful.
Oh, that was... Yeah. Never has
a joke.
That's
a new creation for this movie, because Damien wasn't around then.
No, forgot. Definitely not. It just, that was a total, like, ham-fisted...
He calls her a trollop.
Make sure you wear protection. Like, it was just... It didn't gross. Need to be in the story.
And then Bruce is, like, weirdly embarrassed by it.
Yeah, it didn't need to be in the story.
Yeah, so I didn't like that, but I did like... I actually did really like Dick and Selina's little ride-along in the Batmobile.
Yes.
And them talking about things. I think Dick is a better character for that than Bruce in a lot of ways, and so it's fun to give them that moment to have that conversation. So that part of it actually didn't bother me. I kind of wish that that was a continuing thread and that they didn't kind of put a button on the whole relationship as the end of the movie, but yeah. What can you do?
I thought Jennifer Morrison was really good.
Yes.
As Selina.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
If I hadn't checked to see, oh, who's playing Catwoman, I wouldn't have guessed that was her.
You guys noticed that her cat was named Eartha?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
That was great.
I didn't love the Catwoman design. I mentioned on social media that there's a weird Aeon Flux quality to it, where she looks very stretched out, like very long face and stuff like that. That's like a minor quibble, but I thought that was this sort of the more compelling part of this movie. Like, the Hush stuff is like whatever, but like this relationship between them is interesting. Jennifer Morrison carries it because Jason O'Mara as Bruce, like it's just wooden. And I mean, that kind of works sometimes because Bruce should be sort of, you know, like not just, fun compared to her, but
you just wonder what she sees in him other than his physical attraction. Like, he's not charming when he's with her by alone. Like, there's no modulation in how he's portrayed.
Yeah. And again, like, she's shocked when she finds out. I'm like,
yeah, he's the same Batman with Commissioner Gordon as he is having breakfast with Selina, as he is with Dick, as he is with a criminal. Like, there's no change in the way he's portrayed, and you just find yourself wondering what she sees in him. Because I thought she was great in the movie. I really liked Catwoman, and it was one of the first times where I was okay, because I'm not a big fan of their relationship. I didn't grow up with her as a primary romantic partner.
You agree with Damon on that? You and Damon are on the same page?
Well, I'm not to the extent of that, but I liked them together in this movie. I thought they were a fun couple, as wooden as he was. I thought they were a fun couple, mostly because she was great. I thought Jennifer Morrison was great. So that part I was actually enjoying while watching it was their interactions, their partnership.
Let me break in real quick to blow your minds. There are two Peyton lists.
And they're both in the movie.
And they are both in this movie, as I think what's happening here. It's hard to kind of, but like there's a Peyton List who was born in 1998 and is definitely not the Mad Men actress.
I thought that was against guild rules. That actors.
Yeah, don't you have to have a different name?
She's listed as Peyton List 2 on IMDb.
Weird.
On Wikipedia, they say it's the same Peyton List, but I think if you try that and you go to Peyton Roy List, so it's Peyton Roy, ROI, List,
right,
on Wikipedia. She was an actress who has appeared in the Diary of the Wimpy Kid film series and the YouTube show Cobra Kai. And she's 21. She was born in 1998.
She played Batgirl.
Listed on her credits here.
Yeah.
So it's weird. There's two Peyton Lists in this movie. That very common name, Peyton List.
We've talked a lot about what didn't work. I liked Catwoman. I liked their relationship. What did you guys like? Did you like anything? Did anything work for you? Other than Jennifer Morrison.
You mentioned Catwoman.
Yeah.
It occurred to me that, they made this change here, and I'm a proponent for making changes in adaptations, because like, what's the point if you don't play with it a little bit? I don't think it necess it it the change to the Riddler being Hush doesn't satisfy a lot of the things that they set up, and it makes weird things into red herrings that just feel they feel less like red herrings and more like, why is this even here?
Mm-hmm.
So with like Tommy and stuff, but the idea of the Riddler, I don't agree that the Riddler is a C-list villain.
Well, at the time of the story, I mean, I've always been a Riddler fan.
At the time of the story, okay.
At the time of this, I'm always a big Riddler fan. Probably goes back to Frank Ocean and Batman 66. But sure. At the time of the story, he was a character not really used much.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue that continued on through, 2011 when the New 52
and
happened.
And this is post Jim Carrey as the Riddler.
Oh, for
so
sure, yeah.
That probably hurt his cred for a little bit.
I think for a certain type of fan like us, he's a major player. But I think he was considered he'd fallen into C-list category. The same with the Penguin, who had to be moved to basically being a crime boss because he was a C-lister as a villain.
And this is before Paul Dini as writing the Riddler in Detective Comics.
I believe so.
So like this actually sort of rolls into that. Well, there's some weird stuff with Infinite Crisis that. They remove the information from, like, the Riddler goes into a coma and loses the knowledge of Bruce Wayne being Batman.
Right, because at the end of the story, he knows everything.
Yeah. So, but then that, I think, leads into Paul Dini using him and bringing him into Detective Comics as this more sort of morally gray character.
Yeah.
So we've had some really good Riddler stories since then, like the War of Jokes and Riddles and stuff like that, and I always think of the Denny stuff with the Riddler. But so, yeah, I guess at the time, sure, C-list character, but and maybe it's because Batman's Rogues Gallery is so good that I consider sort of them all A-list rogues compared to other superheroes' rogues galleries.
Right.
If that makes sense. Right, like sure. he's a Batman villain, so he's pretty big. But anyway, so they pull on some interesting threads there. So I like the idea that he's briefly given this power up from being in the Lazarus pit, and then Batman is pointing out very smartly that when they figure out what you did, and then like Poison Ivy and let alone, you know, Ra's al Ghul and the League of Assassins, like they're gonna kill your ass.
Yeah.
Like you are a very tiny fish in a very big pond of piranhas, and like they are going to come for you. So even if you kill me, like then there's going to be no one to protect you. Yep. Quite honestly. So there's some interesting stuff there. The other thing, so going back to the changes and adaptations thing, I think we as a group did like what they did with Gotham by Gaslight.
Yep.
Where they made a big change as to like who the bad guy was in that. And I think that's what they were going for here. It worked in that one.
I think they earned the change. And yeah, also, I don't know that Gotham by Gaslight, the whole story is about the villain, as opposed to here where this is the whole story. The name of the story is Hush. The villain is the main, you know, the point.
Right.
And to change the point.
This is like changing the ending to Murder on the Orient Express.
Right. It'll be surprising, but it'll also take the whole point of the story away.
Right.
So, Ryan, what did you like? Anything?
Not much. I'm always watching these things, looking for what there is to like in them. And this one, I would say, missed almost every swing that it took. I'm still enjoying Rainn Wilson as Lex Luthor, which is a surprise to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Is that enough?
Sure. That's something.
Harley's hyenas are the Three Stooges, but I think that's established before this movie. So,
yeah,
it was nice to see her in her. You know, at this point, it's like seeing in one of their classic costumes is so rare in the media world. It's nice to see.
Was that part of the Hush costume that her upper arms were exposed?
No, that was not.
No, okay. So that's a new design for this.
Yeah.
Okay, but more towards the classic Harley from the original animated series than
as opposed
what we've
to
seen lately.
Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
It's always nice and funny to see Dick Grayson take a major role in something when he's being, you know, slowly murdered in the comics. Sean Mayer,
who has been playing the Flash in these.
He's also been playing Dick Grayson.
Has he been doing both?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know.
I watched this movie after doing trapeze yesterday, where I think I broke a toe. It's very purple today. I don't quite remember.
It's nice to see these things that are just not in the comics anymore.
Okay, I got a genuine like.
Mm-hmm.
I am not familiar with the actor, at least I don't think, the actors who played Joker and Harley Quinn. I think they did a good job.
Yeah.
I think they're more known as like video game voiceover artists and are just like they're known for their animated work as opposed to them being TV actors brought into this.
They're voice actors.
Yeah, they're voice actors. It's a very long way around about saying they are voice actors.
Jason Spizak, who does Joker.
It's not stunt casting.
No, he's like a video game and cartoon and voice actor. He's very good.
Yeah, I thought they were really good as, like, let's just do a classic Joker and Harley Quinn.
I will say that the first 30 minutes until the Joker shoots Tommy, I was enjoying it. For all the problems I was noticing, I was enjoying watching it. And then the second half, I did not enjoy watching. So if I had another positive, it would be that I thought the first half was fun. And then the problem is the second half, all the problems of the first half, you know, bore fruit. And that's when the movie fell apart.
Here's something I wanted to ask you, specifically Connor, after watching this. There are two parts in here where they place major emphasis on Batman and his code. He's unwilling to kill.
Right.
There's a point where he's almost going to kill the Joker. He's almost going to strangle him.
Right.
In the comic, Jim Gordon actually shoots him.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, grazes him.
Yeah.
Here, he doesn't get that far. He just says, hey, knock it off.
Like, hey, stop it.
Gotham needs the Batman.
Right.
And then Batman's like, oh, right, Gotham. It's like mentioning Martha in the live-action movies. And then at the end, it's the cause for him and Selina to sort of part ways, at least for now, because he wasn't willing to let the Riddler die, whereas she's like, screw this, and like cuts the cord. Which side are you on?
In terms of,
or like, do you think Bruce Wayne / Batman is completely in the right here, or is this a compulsion where he's following a code that defies logic?
His non-killing code defies logic? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, especially in these instances.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the conundrum with Batman, is, you know, the argument that you keep letting the Joker live and therefore everyone's killed is on your head, but he is compulsively against people dying. But it made a lot more sense in the book because there's a long build-up, and while he's fighting the Joker, there's all kind of, he's flashes to Jason being killed and Barbara being shot and all the terrible things the Joker's done. So when he gets, and then he's just shot his friend Tommy. So when he gets to the point where he's strangling him, it feels earned as opposed to here, which is like,
yeah, here it definitely isn't.
Just like some dude you just ran to again that you hadn't seen in 20 years. And it's sad, but like, is it worse than anything else he's done in the last 10 years you've been fighting it? Loeb did a better job of making him earn that moment than the movie did. That's the, like, sort of the breaking point of the film where the thing, everything falls apart, is that fight. But yeah, Batman's code makes no sense. But that's,
well, no, I think it's important to the character that he has a code against. I mean, he is a superhero at the end of the day.
I think it's important. I'm just saying, when you break it down logically, it doesn't make any sense. But that's what makes Batman Batman. He doesn't.
It,
he defies logic.
The illogic of it bothers me less than like a guy who has a code against killing putting, like, and hates guns, but he'll put cannons on his car. Like, that's what bothers me more, because I'm like, well, a cannon's just a very large gun that you put on four wheels. I don't think it really, you have a kind of dodging the issue there, Bats. But for me, Selina's kind of callous disregard for life, like, is off-putting, and it's unclear to me why she holds to that as strongly as Batman holds to his code, and why she's not willing to play along with Batman's thing. And then, you know, with the Riddler at the very end, like, he's a terminal cancer patient already.
Right. Well, he's not. He's been cured.
Batman said that it was already coming back, because it's a temporary, at least in, according to this script, it's a temporary fix. It doesn't make Riddler immortal.
I think it's ambiguous in that. I don't know. I don't know that they definitively say one way or the other. There's the boost in power. Like, he's got, like, extra strength.
Yeah.
It also makes you temporarily crazy, right? Like, that's the whole thing with the Lazarus. Like,
you come out crazy. I mean, the idea of it, you being strong and smart, has never really been a thing about the Lazarus Pit, and I don't remember that from the Hush book either. That was
I don't mind the idea of you have a crazy vision when you're in the pit. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, sure.
And I liked that maybe it was something about the pit's healing effects that allowed the Riddler to put all the pieces together.
Yeah, like he's unraveling things.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
So it gives you clarity, but then it also makes you bonkers, like, afterwards. It's kind of, like, it doesn't give you, like, a rational rage. Like, that's usually how it gets played out.
Berserker mode.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the risk of beating a dead horse, I think we're pretty much disappointed.
I'm not.
We didn't like it.
I didn't go in with high expectations.
No, but you want everyone to be good.
Right, yeah, sure.
You want to enjoy yourself. You don't want to feel like you're trapped watching this film. You want to have a good time. Every move I put in, I want to be good and enjoyable.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed in that sense.
Of course.
So overall, Batman Hush, misfire. One of their big misfires, especially of late.
Not for lack of ambition, though.
Sure, it's sure.
I'll say that there are entries in here that I feel like were just sort of phoned in. I know it, like, people put care and attention into this stuff, but the overall feeling at the end is like, this wasn't inspired. Whereas this, like, I feel like they were trying something and it just didn't work.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It didn't work. So let's do ratings for this before we move on to the next thing we're going to talk about. Ratings out of 5. I think I have to go with a 2.
I think 2's about right. I could maybe even go a little lower, but I think I'll stick with 2.
I'll go 2 for tilt, just for, like I said, there was, you know, they were trying something with this and they just didn't hit it.
Right.
But it's definitely not satisfying. It's not something I would recommend to anyone.
So two things as we move on. One is that Batman Hush marked the return of the Showcase shorts, which was a staple of the original line of films, in which they would attach a short that would feature other characters that wouldn't maybe necessarily support a full feature film.
It's so weird to be nostalgic about those, but it has been a while.
It's been a long time, and they were great. I thought they were all
they were so good,
really good. This features Sergeant Rock as voiced by Carl Urban, and I can't tell you anything more about it because.
Why can't you tell us any more about it?
So I always buy the disc. Paul and Ryan watch it digitally, which you don't get the short. You don't get any of the bonus features. I went to put the disc in this morning. My Blu-ray player would not play it. Updated the software, updated the firmware, would not play it. I put in three more other discs they would not play, so clearly my Blu-ray player died this morning.
Hush killed your Blu-ray player?
So I had to spend some money that I wasn't planning on spending this morning on a new Blu-ray player, but luckily Hush is also available currently on the DC Universe app, so I watched it there.
Oh, okay. I thought you watched Hush and then you were going to watch the Showcase.
No. The whole movie wouldn't play. The whole disc wouldn't play.
Okay, I gotcha.
And about four other discs I put in wouldn't play. So
okay.
I was able to watch the DC Universe app, so if you have the app, you can watch it there. But unfortunately, the short was not on the app, and since I couldn't get the disc to play, I couldn't watch the short. So I'm sort of waiting for my new Blu-ray player to arrive so I can watch the short, because I'm very excited to watch it. Hopefully I've seen it by the time the show actually comes out.
I think it sucks that they don't include that in the rental. That should just tag that on at the end.
Or put it in the beginning, like a little, animated
kickoff
like they used to do. I think Bruce Timm directed this short.
Back when you used to go to the Nickelodeon, Connor?
Exactly. You get the news and then you get the cartoon. So we have no review of that, which is fortunate. But going forward, there'll be more shorts. They announced it recently.
What if we saved them all up and did a special edition where we just did all the five upcoming shorts?
Well, that'll be a long time.
Years from now?
Yeah. That's like 3 years away.
Let's all try to see it before the next
one of these. Yeah, we'll talk about it next time. So Phantom Stranger is coming.
Just check the next. Yeah.
Adam Strange, Death, and then Batman. I believe Death is on the Wonder Woman film, which we'll talk about now. So the next film is Wonder Woman Bloodlines, which is interesting for a number of reasons. One, they put out a Wonder Woman film very early on in the run, and it was terrific.
I think it was one of the best things they've done. Maybe the best.
The fourth film they did. Did not sell out well, so they never made another Wonder Woman film. But of course, the film did great, so they put another Wonder Woman film into production. The trailer came out recently. It's another in-continuity film, which is kind of a bummer. It seems almost close to being another origin film, which I feel like we don't need, since that's what was the last animated film, and that's what the live-action film was.
So this is Rosario Dawson?
It's Rosario Dawson again. I don't mind that costume.
The only thing, it just reminds me of, they set this up a long time ago and are still sticking with that costume.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This Rosario Dawson is Diana and all the regular people. It
was originally Michelle Monaghan.
That's right, but she took over.
Rosario Dawson was in the Wonder Woman movie, but she was playing Artemis?
Yes. Yes,
she was. I think that's right. And then she went on to just play Wonder Woman.
I believe it was Kerry Russell who was Wonder Woman in that original movie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Kerry Russell was Wonder Woman, but Michelle Monaghan was...
She was Wonder Woman in the first continuity film, yeah.
Yeah.
So this film is basically Steve Trevor washes up on the shores of Themyscira. Wonder Woman brings him back to her,
Really?
Yeah. So... It's sort of a third Wonder Woman origin film.
They did that already.
Yep. We'll find out. Wonder Woman Bloodlines comes out in October. We'll be back to review that one, as well as hopefully we'll all be able to see the Death short, which is with it. So that's October. Is there anything else? It looks like Superman Red Sun's after that next year.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're on the Jim Lee train, so they're developing the Superman Man of Tomorrow story that he did with Brian Azzarello as another one of these. Which I remember being really bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not exactly a beloved storyline, but...
Oh, but it's Jim Lee.
Yeah. I've actually intentionally avoided that one.
So,
I've never actually read that.
The next four films, subject to change, is Wonder Woman Bloodlines in October, Superman Red Sun early 2020, Justice League Dark Apocalypse War, which is a sequel to the Justice League Dark film, which I think we liked. I can't remember. It came out 2 years ago. I think we liked it.
Oh, that was, didn't they, in here, in this movie, in Hush, they reminded us that Lex is part of the Justice League?
Did they?
They specifically mentioned, he said, like, I saved you people from Cyborg Superman. And, like,
oh, right,
that
yeah.
was true. We just saw that in Reign of the Supermen.
Right.
But then he also said, and also, I'm a member of the Justice League. And then Batman was like...
Probationary, we'll call you.
Yeah,
that's
probationary.
Right, that's
like,
right, that's right.
And, like, that was a reveal at the end of one of these.
Yeah, so who knows if that
ties in or
not.
And there was no end credits sequence for this one, right?
Right, there wasn't.
Right.
Okay.
So Bloodlines, Red Sun... That'll be a standalone, I assume, Justice League Dark, and then Man of Tomorrow. So that's what we got coming up. I'm obviously looking forward to the shorts more than I am any of those.
Sure.
Well, look, Red Sun. Red Sun's great. Red Sun's great. That's one of my favorite Superman stories of all time. So that's very.
And it's only 3 issues, so as an adaptation, I think it might actually work better than something like 12 issues.
That's true.
Which we just sat through. So.
All right, so that is it for Batman Hush and all related content. Any final thoughts?
Nope.
I think I'm just going to keep quiet.
If you decided just to listen to the podcast and not watch the movie, you're done right.
Keep on trucking.
Things, we love these films. We want them to be good. We're sad they're not. No one's gleeful about this. I would love to have been like, that was great, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I kept looking for things that... And this is I'd like to see more of Jennifer Morrison as Catwoman.
Well, you know, if they ever decide to do the...
Tom King's Batcat
story, she would be great.
Absolutely.
Maybe Jason O'Mara will get a movie and can't do the voice, and they need to get someone.
Can we get a movie that was just that awesome double date issue at the Kansas State Fair or whatever?
That's fine with me. I like Jason O'Mara as an actor. I've talked about this before. I think he's a good actor. I think he's charming on screen.
What does he do other than these?
He's done other stuff. I haven't seen him.
I know he does other stuff. I just don't know what it is.
He was in the short-lived time travel sci-fi Fox show Terra Incognito.
He's on Life on Mars. He's in a lot of guest spots on American TV. He's an Irish actor. So he's good. He just, whatever reason, they're directing him to be a robot, which is challenging when he has to be the star of a film.
I also watched Mindhunter season 2 this weekend. They should put Anna Torv in one of these because she's great.
Well, there you go. If anyone has, if Warner Brothers needs casting ideas, give us a call.
So you guys are listening.
I mean, we are a brain trust. It's kind of shocking they haven't reached out already.
So go check out Science Sort Of. That's Ryan's podcast, Science Sort Of. You can check out the Pick of the Week show every week for Josh Flanagan. Sometimes Ryan Haupt and I talk about the week's comics. That's over at fanboy.com. And we'll be back in October for Wonder Woman Bloodline. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm hushing up.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.